Welcome to the Herd Health Podcast, a convenient place where you can stay up to date on the dairy and beef cattle industry in Canada. With information shared from our technical services veterinarian team, we aim to bring producers, ranchers, and veterinarians relevant insights on trends, management practices, and science that can be applied in the field. This podcast is brought to you by the cattle team at Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health Canada, a leader in the animal health industry. You can find episodes of our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, to the next episode of the Herd Health Podcast. This is Dr. Phil Meadows with you today, and I'm one of the technical services veterinarians with Boehringer Ingelheim. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to remind you that we would love a subscribe or review on this podcast if you like it. So please consider doing that on your favorite podcast platform. Today, I'm excited to bring Dr. Jan Sargent to our podcast. Welcome, Dr. Jan.
Thanks, Phil, and thank you very much for having me on this podcast. By way of introduction, my name's Jan Sargent. I am a veterinarian, and I did practice food producing animals for several years after I graduated, primarily dairy cattle, but then returned to Ontario Veterinary College to get degrees in epidemiology. And since then, I've been a career academic doing research. I've worked at Kansas State University College of Vet Med, the McMaster University Medical Center, and then returned to OVC in 2007, where I worked until I retired about 2 years ago. In terms of my research, I cover all species, and mostly I've focused on taking research and using it to produce evidence, doing systematic reviews and that sort of thing. I have been a fellow of the Canadian Academy of Health Sciences since about 2017, and I currently serve on the executive of that organization as president-elect. And this is the group that undertook the assessment we want to talk about today. It was my privilege to serve as chair of an expert panel on antimicrobial use and antimicrobial resistance in food-producing animals that was undertaken by the Canadian Academy of Health Sciences and was sponsored by the CFIA and by PHAC.
Yes, there's going to be some terms that are used during this discussion today, antimicrobial and antibacterial or antibiotic resistance, so antibiotic versus antimicrobial. I think it's fair to say that we'll use them interchangeably today, Jan.
Yes. I mean, they're not completely the same thing. Antimicrobial is a little bit broader, but I think for the purposes of today, that's a fair way to go. And I try to remember to say antimicrobial, but sooner or later, I will slip up and say antibacterial. So
yeah,
antibiotic.
Understood. So explain what cause is maybe and why this paper was created. Because as you mentioned, we're going to be discussing the recent publication from the Canadian Academy of Health Sciences. The acronym is CAUSE. So I'd just like you to explain maybe what CAUSE is and how and why this paper was created.
Okay. Well, CAUSE is history is as an honorary society. So there's three in Canada, the Royal Society, Canadian Academy of Health Sciences, and the Canadian Academy of Engineers. And they recognize individuals who have had substantial contributions in the case of CAUSE to the health sciences. The thing that I think is really exciting about this organization is that they define health sciences broadly. So it's not just the human medical community, it's veterinarians, dentists, nurses, pharmacologists, and rehabilitation scientists. There's about 1,000 fellows, and new fellows are elected every year. They are nominated by members of the health science discipline and selected by fellows. But in addition to being an honorary society, CAUSE also has a very strong service component. And so one of the key activities of the fellows of the Academy are that they provide independent assessments on issues that are important to the health of Canadians and really try to take an action and a solution-based approach to addressing these questions from an independent third-party standpoint. And so this assessment is one of those. I'm sure I don't have to tell your audience how important antimicrobial resistance is. We're estimating today that somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 Canadians die every day of antimicrobial resistant illnesses. And it's anticipated that that numbers are only going to increase over time. And this is a global phenomenon, not just in Canada. So about a decade ago, the World Health Organization asked all of the member countries to come up with a plan, an action plan to deal with antimicrobial resistance. And across the One Health spectrum, in humans, in animals, in the environment, wherever antimicrobials are used. So Canada put together their action plan. It was finalized in 2023, and they're in the process of operationalizing it. As part of that, the CFIA, Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and the Public Health Agency of Canada, or PHAC, ask the Academy to do an assessment looking at how we can address the issues of antimicrobial use and antimicrobial resistance in food animals to help inform the process of operationalizing the Pan-Canadian Action Plan.
That's a lot of information about how this was all formed. It's a collaboration of a few different organizations coming together here to have this group put forward this paper. So for the sake of today's discussion then, Jen, there's a recent publication from CAUSE, from your group, about antimicrobial resistance and antimicrobial use in food-producing animals in Canada. How many people were on this panel that that was put together, and how were they chosen?
The panel consisted of 13 individuals. Some of them were fellows of the Academy and some of them were not. But these individuals represented all five of the Canadian veterinary colleges. There was someone from an NGO related to agriculture. And then there were a few individuals who have expertise on antimicrobial use and antimicrobial stewardship initiatives from a human health perspective. The individuals were nominated by CAUSE Board of Directors, and they volunteered their time to serve on the expert panel. I chaired the panel, and we selected the panel members to provide expertise across a breadth of topics because it was quite complex questions we were being asked to address by the sponsors. So we needed expertise on not only animal health, but surveillance, policy, and so on. We also strove to have a range of species expertise across food-producing animal spectrum, as well as geographic representation. All of the members were Canadian.
I'm going to go back to a previous comment you made, Jen. On a previous podcast, when we talk about antimicrobial resistance, the speaker that we had on mentioned that, in his opinion, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when antimicrobial resistance is created. And that's kind of a sobering thought, that it really, it's going to depend on a whole lot of different organizations and people around the world, but for Canada, within Canada, to help make a difference so that it's going to extend the time for the antibiotics that we're having today to be continue to be efficacious or useful for a very long time.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. You know, and you're right. The bottom line is when we use antimicrobials, resistance will inevitably develop. We can't get around that. And yet on the flip side, I think we have a moral and a societal obligation to keep our animals healthy and to raise them with a high level of welfare. And so, you know, there are circumstances where we are going to have to use antimicrobials in order to keep our animals healthy and see to their well-being. Also on the complexity side, you're right. I mean, we have a very complex political system in Canada, federal system, provincial, local, you know, a lot of our surveillance and so on, for example, is carried out federally, and yet veterinarians are regulated provincially. We have a wide array of food producing animals, and they're very regionally diverse. So most of our beef industry is out west. You know, most of our dairy industry is focused on a few provinces. We have producers, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have commodity groups, there's just so many layers to this, and everybody needs to be able to communicate and work together. And while I think people are committed to doing so, it's very difficult to actually achieve in practice. So it's if there was an easy solution, we would have already found it.
That's right, Jen. Yes, for sure. So getting back to the paper that we're going to talk about today, what was the purpose of this paper then?
So the main purpose was to help inform our Pan-Canadian Action Plan on antimicrobial resistance. But the main question that we were asked by the sponsors was to identify promising and strategic interventions that might be implemented to further strengthen prudent use of antimicrobials in food-producing animals, and particularly in the Canadian context. So what could we do in Canada to improve antimicrobial use? That was the main question. But with that, there were a number of sub-questions. And so, for instance, they asked us to summarize the evidence that antimicrobial use in animals is a problem, in terms of resistance in animals, in terms of resistance in humans. They also asked us to look at international approaches to addressing the issue of antimicrobial use and antimicrobial resistance, and to really think about, would they be useful in the Canadian context? They asked to consider aspects of surveillance for both antimicrobial use and resistance, and where there might be gaps. And also there was a piece related to what are consumers of food-based proteins or animal-based proteins, what do they think about antimicrobial resistance and use, and do they have any knowledge of that area? So there were quite a lot of questions that were part of this assessment, but the main driver was, what can we do in the Canadian context that might move things forward?
Yes, so the the entire document is quite a large document, Jan, and even the executive summary is over 10 pages in length here that I'm looking at it in front of me. So it's going to be difficult in this podcast to really get in deep on the whole thing, but I'd like to tease apart a couple of areas that I think would be relevant to many of our listeners, those being beef and dairy producers, as well as food animal veterinarians. So maybe if you could just give us a broad overview to start out with as far as describing the paper in its various chapters. I believe there's 8 to get all together.
So yeah, there are 8 chapters, and then chapter 9 is sort of the summary and putting it all together. And essentially, each of those chapters corresponds to a question or a topic area that the sponsors asked us to investigate. And so we want this to be evidence-based. And so we collected a lot of information. We did a really deep dive literature review into what is in the published literature to address all of these questions and sub-questions. We did a series of international case studies, 8 different jurisdictions in the European Union, the United States, Australia, the United Kingdom, to not only document review to see what they're doing, but we also did key informant interviews with individuals in these different jurisdictions and countries to hear about what they'd done, what worked, what didn't work, what they thought about how it might work in the Canadian context. We also did quite extensive consultations here in Canada. So we had several webinars where any interested party could participate, could ask questions and provide input. The first one was really just to hear from people about what they thought about antimicrobial use and resistance in food-producing animals. And then a second webinar, we presented some of our early findings to get some feedback on what people thought about them, whether they resonated with them as areas of importance or whether they had concerns with implementing some of the suggestions. And then we also did key informant individuals with individuals in government, in commodity groups, veterinary regulators, and so on.
So it was quite an extensive time period then where you got input from many different people and organizations.
Yeah, so we spent the first several months just collecting this data. And after that, the panel broke into smaller task groups. Everybody participated in 2 or 3 task groups, and they would meet weekly to talk about this evidence as it pertained to their chapter or topic area and come up with what they thought were some of the key findings and what were some of the key gaps in that area. And then we met as a full panel on a monthly basis to say, okay, you know, what are we seeing? What are we hearing? And to use those discussions to put forward what we thought might be promising strategic interventions for dealing with antimicrobial use and resistance in food animals.
So what kind of a time frame did you work on this project then?
It was just over a year. We started in February of 2024, and the final report was published on the website and presented to our sponsors in the end of March of this year. So it was just over a year from start to finish.
What I'm going to ask you next, Jan, is just with so many different chapters and a lot of information in this document, kind of what would be the most relevant area or chapter maybe within this document that would be relevant to beef and dairy producers and veterinarians?
One of the background chapters focuses on the concept of antimicrobial stewardship. And I think that, you know, many veterinarians and producers are aware of what stewardship means. But I think that it really is an important shift maybe in thinking. You know, historically, when we talked about trying to combat antimicrobial resistance, we talked about prudent use of antimicrobials. And I think in this assessment, we really tried to embrace the concept of antimicrobial stewardship. And the difference is stewardship encompasses all of the factors that will impact antimicrobial use and resistance. So certainly prudent use of antimicrobials is an important part of that. But it includes more. It includes things like biosecurity. You know, we know the best way to not use antibiotics is to not have to because animals are healthy. And so it expands beyond the concept of simply prudent use. And so if there are veterinarians or producers who want sort of a refresher or a primer on the concepts of antimicrobial stewardship, there's a chapter on that. And then I think the other chapter that's probably most relevant to veterinarians and producers is a chapter on on-farm interventions to reduce antimicrobial use, but really to embrace antimicrobial stewardship. And in this chapter, we sort of looked at 4 types of interventions. So first of all, we looked at biosecurity and management to keep animals healthy. We also looked at vaccines because that's an extremely important part of many producers' approach to preventing disease. We looked at alternative products, and we talked about that name quite a bit because these are products that could be used instead of antibiotics, but in some cases they could be used in addition to antibiotics. But the point here is, what are products that could be used to reduce the amount of antimicrobials that we need to use? And then the fourth area in interventions that we looked at is decision-making tools. So, for example, in dairy, where we may be working with individual animals, things like cowside tests to determine very quickly, with a case of mastitis, do we need to use antibiotics or not? Or at a production level for dairy or for beef cattle, decision-making tools, for example, using historic data to predict future needs, or algorithms to select cows for selective dry cow treatment. You know, what are these decision-making tools that are out there, and are there validated tests available to help with prudent use of antimicrobials? So I think that chapter sort of presents the evidence for efficacy and effectiveness of some of these different approaches, but it also identifies areas where there are perhaps gaps or future research needs.
So is that chapter you're discussing here, the farm level interventions, is that chapter 5? Is that what
yes,
you're talking about?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay. And the background chapter on antibiotic or antimicrobial stewardship versus prudent use of antimicrobials, that was a background chapter?
Yeah, it was either 2 or 3.
Okay.
Figured that out.
The reason I brought that up, Jamin, is I'll admit, as a veterinarian in practice over 20 years, when these terms stewardship and prudent use came up, when Boehringer started this campaign, for lack of a better word, around awareness of prudent use or antimicrobial stewardship, I'll admit that I had to look at the definition of the two of them to understand better as to what the differences were between the two. So I think making them aware that there is a chapter specifically that helps describe or explain a little bit about the difference between the two, I think it would be well received, I think, by many of our listeners. Jan, I'd appreciate if you could just give us an overview of the strategic interventions within this document, please.
So, you know, we had all these discussions about the various questions that the sponsors wanted us to answer and all of the evidence that we collected to address those. And then at the end of the day, we came back to their original question, which is, what are some promising and strategic interventions that might be implemented in the Canadian context to deal with antimicrobial use and resistance in food-producing animals, particularly in the Canadian context? And we came up with 5, and they're not mutually exclusive. I think any one of them could be implemented and would have an impact. If they were all implemented, it would obviously have a much larger impact. The first one was to identify a governance structure to lead and coordinate implementation of the Pan-Canadian Action Plan in food-producing animals. And so we talked earlier about the incredible complexity of our food-producing animal system. And so it's really important that we have clear structures for that discussion and clear accountability. And there has been work in the past. A few years ago, a Morris report was published that came up with a few possible structures that could be implemented and pros and cons and costs of each one, but neither has yet been implemented. So we bring that back as a strategic intervention. A second one was to adopt farm-level antimicrobial use data collection and benchmarking. And we realized that this one is controversial. You know, there's a lot of issues around, certainly lots of veterinarians and lots of producers collect data on how they are using antimicrobials. We recognize that and we acknowledge that. What we're talking about here is moving more to a system where that data is centrally collected and could be used for benchmarking, monitoring progress, documenting successes, comparing ourselves to other countries. And so this becomes quite controversial. It would be logistically quite difficult. And there's also a lot of issues around data ownership, proprietary issues around data. So I think that this is something that we recognize other countries do and the value of doing it. You can't manage what you can't measure. But we also recognize that implementing this strategic intervention would be a process and would be something that would likely have to be implemented in stages over time.
I've had the pleasure in my new role here at Boehringer of traveling across the country, and I've spent a little bit of time in Quebec learning about their system. And we actually invited a practitioner from Quebec onto this podcast a few podcasts ago. You were mentioning how having a database that information can be entered into across, say, a province or across the country to help with benchmarking and also data collection. I think that Quebec may be a model here in Canada for creating such a system. Was any of that uncovered with your research?
Yes, and you're right, Frank. Quebec has provided leadership in this area and has certainly been moving towards exactly that, like providing data suitable for benchmarking. And so, yes, we do use that as a case study example in the full report, the Quebec model.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt. You can continue on with your strategic interventions. I just thought I'd put that little bit in there with.
Yeah, it's a good one to bring up because Quebec has shown leadership in a number of areas here. And, you know, there's some reasons for that, but I think it's good to acknowledge it and celebrate it. Okay, so the third intervention is to make antimicrobial stewardship the standard of practice for veterinarians. And so this one I think would be quite novel and quite unique because when in the last several years in Canada, we have moved to making antimicrobials of importance to humans are now only available through veterinary prescription. And this really highlights the absolutely essential role that veterinarians have in antimicrobial stewardship initiatives in Canada. You know, they are the gatekeepers of antimicrobials. And so certainly, again, veterinarians and veterinary regulatory organizations are working hard to implement stewardship. But if we make it part of the formal standard of practice, it will really emphasize the importance of incorporating this into veterinary practice. The fourth one is to restrict the use of Category 1 antimicrobials in food-producing animals. So Category 1 antimicrobials are the ones that are of most importance for human medicine. And many countries do restrict the use of Category 1 antimicrobials. And so this could be for preventing disease or for treating disease. And in Canada, when we talk about preventing disease, we actually have very few Category 1 antimicrobials that are licensed for preventive reasons. And so here we would be talking, with one exception that I'll get to in a minute, but we'll be talking about extra-label drug use and to no longer use Category 1s extra-labelly unless there is compelling evidence that nothing else will work. And by compelling evidence, it might be things like bacterial culture and sensitivity from a lab, you know, documented history in a herd or flock of other antimicrobials not working and so on, but that would need to be justified and documented. The one area where we do use a Category 1 preventively is dry cow treatments in dairy cattle that use Ceftifur. And so a component of restricting the use might be to consider either banning the use of Ceftifur or moving away from a blanket dry cow treatment towards selective dry cow treatment. And I think both of these are things that have been discussed within the dairy industry.
And other countries have implemented that as well.
As well. Yep,
several years ago already.
Yep. And I think there's actually some very strong evidence that we can move in that direction without negatively impacting animal health and welfare. So, I mean, this is one that I think there is support, certainly in the dairy industry, moving towards. In terms of treatments, again, this wouldn't be saying you can never use them. It would just be if you're going to use a Category 1 to treat an animal, it has to be formally justified why a lesser antimicrobial is not suitable. And so by putting these restrictions in place, I think it would enable veterinarians and producers to really step back and think even more than they already do about, could I use an antimicrobial of lesser importance without impacting the health and welfare of the animal I'm using it on.
You mentioned Category 1 there, and for the listeners that aren't as familiar with this categorization of antimicrobials, I'll maybe just put in a little blurb here about explaining that part of it. But to me, Category 1, 2, 3, it starts with the level of importance in human medicine. So Category 1 being the most important for the use of human treatments.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And I think we have to be a little bit careful too when we talk about what other countries are doing, because the way we categorize these is actually a little bit different. So there's not 100% overlap on what we might say is a Category 1 as opposed to another country. And certainly when we get down to the antimicrobials of lesser importance, there's big difference in whether people consider ionophores an antibiotic or not. And certainly those are widely used, particularly in poultry production.
Well, there you go, Jan. I learned something today then. I didn't realize that the categorization of antimicrobials was different from country to country.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of overlap, but it's not 100%. And okay. So, you know, countries who say we have never used Category 1s may differ from a Canadian saying we've never used Category 1s.
Okay.
You can start a fist fight by doing country comparisons.
All right. We will refrain from doing country comparisons on this episode.
Yep.
I think there's one last strategic intervention then that you wanted to talk about.
So the final strategic intervention was to support relevant targeted research to enhance knowledge on the application and efficacy of strategies and products aimed at keeping animals healthy. So again, this speaks to the concept that, you know, the best way to not use an antimicrobial is to not have to, because the animal is healthy. And certainly there has been an enormous amount of research done, you know, to prevent animals from becoming ill, but there are gaps in our knowledge. And so continuing to make sure not only that we support research, but that we target research so that our research dollars are used as effectively as possible to keep animals safe and healthy.
That's for sure. Yes. You mentioned stewardship, antimicrobial stewardship in one of these strategic interventions. I believe it was number 3. Did you want to maybe explain to our listeners the 5 R's of antimicrobial stewardship?
Sure. So, you know, antimicrobial stewardship, as I mentioned earlier, encompasses prudent use of antimicrobials, but goes further and thinks about all of the factors that might impact antimicrobial use. And so sometimes you'll hear people talk about the 5 R's of antimicrobial stewardship. And the first of these is responsibility. And that's really taking personal responsibility for using an antimicrobial every time you do so, thinking about whether it's necessary and not using it unless it is necessary for the health and welfare of the animal. The second one is reducing antimicrobial use. So for example, by enhancing biosecurity or other husbandry practices to maximize animal health, we can talk about refining use. For example, targeting specific antibiotics to specific diseases or disease conditions in specific animals or groups of animals. Replacing antimicrobials. So for instance, using an antimicrobial of lesser importance to human health whenever possible to do so. And then finally, reviewing use of antimicrobials on a continuing basis. So this would be producers and veterinarians working together to say, you know, how is our stewardship program working? Is it working? Can we do better? Where are the areas where we could improve? So responsibility, reducing, refining, replacing, and reviewing are the 5 R's of stewardship.
Thank you, Jan. That was very well explained. Going back to chapter 5, it's specific to farm level interventions to reduce the need for antimicrobial use. From your perspective, what would you think is the key takeaway for this chapter regarding dairy and beef production if you were to, you know, distill it down into one key takeaway?
I think for me, the one key takeaway is there's a tremendous amount of research out there. Yes, there are vaccines, there's biosecurity, there's alternatives and so on. But what there isn't is a magic bullet. There is not going to be one vaccine or one drug that solves this problem. And so we, as a food producing industry, need to think about all of the strategies and interventions and how they work together in order to keep animals healthy. You know, we're always looking for that. Oh, if we could just give them a feed additive or a supplement or a vaccine, we wouldn't have this problem. And it's like, that's a pipe dream, I'm afraid.
Darn. So there's no magic bullet is what you're saying.
I think that's the big one takeaway.
It's going to come down to very diligent work and working together.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, making sure we have the best management husbandry and biosecurity that we can. And, you know, recognizing there's differences in industries, you know, the way we raise beef cattle in this country, you know, the sort of the classic keep diseases out biosecurity that's implemented in closed systems just isn't feasible. So there we look at other types of management and husbandry to reduce disease.
Yeah. The purpose of this podcast today is not to drill down into the nitty gritty of what specifically can be done. However, I think it's good to keep in mind that it's a matter of working together as several organizations, but even as producers and veterinarians working together to come up with solutions in our own little lane that we're in to help the broader picture maybe.
So maybe based on that, another big take home is one size doesn't fit all. And that, you know, this requires producers and their veterinarians and the whole industry and support group, like tailoring the approach to the individual farm or production system.
Right. So to summarize this discussion then, Jan, what do you want vets and farmers to take away from this document? Is there, I know you gave a key takeaway or two from chapter 5, but broadly then, what would you want vets and farmers to take away from this document?
Well, I think, I think as an industry, we can be proud of what we've accomplished to date. The commodity groups and veterinary regulators, producers have all been working very hard to try to address this problem. But I think that the one big takeaway is that, you know, antimicrobial resistance is actually an existential crisis. It has tremendous public health implications now and in the future. And although we may not see in animals yet the resistance causing as big a problem, let's say, in animal health as it does in human health, it is going to continue to develop in the future. So I think one of the big take homes is we actually do as an industry need to take this seriously. And, you know, we have all of these pressing problems in our day-to-day production systems that sometimes stewardship gets pushed to the side because there's other things we're focused on. And I think one of the big take homes is that every time we reach for an antimicrobial, this needs to be on our minds.
Good point. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. So to maybe expand on that a little bit, what can farmers and vets do now because of this information or as a result of this information that's been put forward in this document?
I think one of the biggest things to do now is, if they're not already doing so, to work together to incorporate a stewardship plan as part of their herd health programs. And so that there is, as part of their herd health programs, there's a strong commitment to antimicrobial stewardship. And part of this comes back to one of the R's of stewardship, and that's reviewing. And so I think it's important to set goals and to measure progress.
Yeah, setting goals, definitely a big part of it. The record keeping thing is still something I think the industry, at least dairy and beef industries, are still finding their way through as to how to make that effective and time efficient at the farm level. We know that it's really important information to be gathering, and yet it can be a challenge for at the farm level to have some of that recording being completed. I agree with you that it is important. And I think maybe that's, as an industry, we in dairy industries can maybe hopefully come up with some practical solutions and yet effective that are going to help with that data recording piece of it.
And, you know, we talked about that quite a bit actually in the panel, and I'm sure you're not surprised to hear, and in our various consultations. And, you know, we do have information, often very good information around drug sales. So we know what we're buying. The piece that's missing in a lot of systems is why we're using it. And until we know, like, what diseases we're treating, when and why, and how successful those treatments are, that's really the missing piece that we need to move forward our stewardship programs. And yet, as you say, that is difficult in many cases, time-consuming and challenging to collect.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else right now, Jan, that you'd like to review again or go over before we summarize things here in our discussion?
No, I think I think that was actually a really good summary of what we looked at. Yeah. As you say, keeping it high level, if people are interested in the nitty-gritty, they can look at the aspects of the report.
I was going to mention something going back to your comment you made around there's some management-related things that antimicrobial stewardship takes into account. And I think we already have many really good examples of things that we've adjusted or changed on farm. I'm thinking on the dairy side to things that we've done with our dry cow programs over the last 20, 25 years. There's a lot of things we've done differently or changed that's ended up with a lot less diseases like milk fever, even though it's not an infectious disease. It's something that was very common. And ketosis is another one, you know, that we've managed to really change the landscape as far as what the expectations are for the amount of cows affected by these two things by simply adjusting diet and also management of these cows at certain times of their lactation cycle.
Yeah, there has been so much done there. And I also think producers just are more used to working within a regulatory framework because they're supply managed. And so, you know, when they agree that a thing needs to be done, they just do it. And so there are some really good success stories, I think.
On the swine side, I was involved at our practice level with some of the very early stages of CPARS. We had quite a bit of swine work done in our clinic, and the two main swine vets took that upon themselves and were part of that when it first got started, as far as thinking that it's important to do some more information gathering and documentation of diseases on at the farm level and also treatment at the farm level and putting that together. I don't have the answer, of course, on the beef side where we go with that, but I do think we have other commodities that have shown some leadership in that area, and hopefully we can bring along the beef side of things.
But you know, and I think, you know, a good example is actually mastitis, because that is, I mean, that's where the drugs are going in dairy cattle, right? The antimicrobials, for the most part. And I mean, they've got validated cow side tests. They've got selective dry cow treatment. They have actually done quite a bit to reduce antimicrobial use. If they pull Ceftiofur, that'll be another big one.
Yeah, the challenge still is closing that information loop.
Yeah.
So that we know which animals they went into and when and for what reason. Because I know the Quebec model, I was blown away by some of the information that the clinic was able to show me, both at the clinic level as well as at the provincial level, as far as disease prevalence even, and how that relates then to various antibiotics that they had available.
Yeah. And I don't know why. We had some discussions around it. Why would have they done that when no one else has? I think some of it is money, and some of it is, you know, again, being maybe more used to a culture where they allow themselves to be regulated, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It really is they've done an outstanding job.
Yeah, I would agree with that on both parts, the money side, because I mean, none of this happens in Quebec without some money put into it by government, for sure.
I think vets and producers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I mean, that's the end of the day. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but one of the reasons why we don't move forward is because there's just so many other, it's like, it's not a lucrative business, and there's so many other things to worry about to put, to make a profit.
That's right.
It's a tough one. Yeah.
Well, thanks very much, Jen, for all this information today on the document that CAUSE put out recently, that published on antimicrobial resistance, antimicrobial use in food producing animals in Canada. I'm going to maybe summarize here just with leaving our listeners with a couple of things to consider or ponder. The five R's of stewardship: responsibility, reducing antibiotic use, refining use, replacing, and reviewing. And also, the next time you treat an animal on your farm with an antibiotic, put some thought into what you're using and why, and is there any vet input as to that decision? I think ultimately it comes down to the farm level of doing what we can in our overall use of antibiotics, to be mindful of the use of these, because we do want them to continue to be effective for a long period of time. At the same time, we want to be doing what's best for our animals that we care for. And so using them when needed, as needed, for the right drug, for the right case.
That's a very good advice.
Just to finish off then, thank you very much for your time today. It's been very informative for me, and I hope many who are listening to this podcast today. If there's people out there listening that would like to learn more about this document, where could they find access to this document?
Well, the full assessment report is available on the Canadian Academy of Health Sciences website. There's a tab for assessments. It's there in English and in French. And there's also an executive summary in English and French. So it's publicly available, and I encourage people to have a look at it if they're interested in hearing more.
Great. We'll include a link with that in our podcast notes so people can choose that link and go on to look into it further if they wish. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us today. And I just want to remind you to like or subscribe to our podcast.
You've been listening to the Herd Health Podcast. The information shared in this podcast does not replace the advice of a veterinarian. We encourage you to reach out to your veterinarian for more information about the topics discussed. Boehringer Ingelheim cannot recommend the use of products outside of the Canadian product approved labeling. Find more episodes of this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks again for listening.